Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Rachel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rachel.
We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in, and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey in recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off, we have Patrick. Patrick, would you like to share?
Sure, thank you, Rachel. Hi, my name's Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Patrick.
And like any other AA meeting or share, I'm just going to tell you my story. As an alcoholic, I identify, really my story starts as never feeling like I fitted in anywhere. Even before I started drinking, I didn't feel like I belonged. And to make sense of that, you know, when I was a child, I didn't feel like I belonged at home. And not that I didn't, I had trouble at home, but I didn't feel like I belonged at school either, you know. And so I ran away from both at different times. And I always look back on that and make sense of it as I didn't feel that I fitted in. So at school, you know, I was sort of popular and made friends, but I didn't really like anybody or didn't feel safe, didn't feel comfortable. At home, you know, I have siblings who I love very much and get on well with. I live with my mum and always got on well with her and we always had fun, but I always had this strange feeling of not fitted in. So I think I was running away, and it was in AA recovery that I really learned that I was running away from myself. It was me that I didn't like, and I think as well I like the idea that, you know, as a dog chasing a car, and I think if I ever got what I thought I wanted, I wouldn't know what to do with it. And then, you know, lots of kind of addictive type behaviours or thrill seeking. You know, before I started drinking as a child, I did a lot of things like shoplifting. I mean, I had I went to posh boarding school and I had a good upbringing and there was always food on the table. There was lots of trauma in my life, but, you know, I went shoplifting just for fun when I was 10, 11, you know, and went through a period of setting fire to things. I used to love setting fire to stuff. And I remember my mum bought me a chemistry set once, and the first thing I did was take everything out and set fire to the bottle of meth that came with it and the box. And then when I was about 13, 14, I found alcohol. And suddenly all the thrill-seeking behaviour stopped, because alcohol numbed me from all those strange feelings I couldn't make sense of, and it just felt like I'd arrived. This was my bus and I was getting on it, and I drank alcoholically from the start. Don't get me wrong, I had a lot of fun, but I also was always drinking for the thrill. I was always drinking and couldn't stop, you know, and I was a blackout. You know, my teens, I wasn't very good at drinking. I used to vomit quite a lot and pass out and black out and embarrass myself. And it didn't really get any better, you know, in my 20s. I just got good at doing it, as far as making sure I had some work that would pay for my addiction, but it was always about that. And I was petrified of life. I was scared of everything. And it got to the point in my mid-20s where I'd always managed to talk my way into good jobs or fun jobs or jobs that you could get away with drinking in, but I became scared of everything. And this is one of the strangest things, is scared of normal life, scared of going to the shop and buying milk. And I can't even explain that, but not wanting to face the person working in the dairy or having a normal conversation with them. And it got to the point where I got scared of answering the phone at work. You know, and I worked in a job where you needed to speak on the phone a lot. You know, I worked in media and PR in the UK, in London, and you had to speak to people all the time. And I got scared because somebody was going to ask me to do something, or I was going to have to take responsibility for something, or get told off, or I don't know. And my drinking just got worse and worse, and the last few years of my drinking became mechanical. It stopped working. It stopped taking away those feelings. It stopped numbing me, but I kept trying, as a good alcoholic does. I kept at it. I kept trying, drinking different things, drinking at different times, banging my head on that wall again and again. And one of the scary things was I started to feel just as anxious and suicidal and scared of life and everything when I was drinking as when I was sober. So my sober life and my drinking life started to merge. And that was frightening. And we talk a bit about we throw this word insanity around a bit in AA, and I don't ever want to undermine anyone with mental health issues, but I started to feel really crazy. And I started seeing a therapist, and she said to me one day, "We're not going to get anything done while you keep drinking the way you are." And she wasn't telling me to stop. She was saying, if you want to get better or life to be different, you need to try and do something about your using. And I was using drugs as well. And I would come into the session still high, hungover, maybe a bit tipsy. And she just shrugged and said, "Well, what do you expect's going to happen?" So I very begrudgingly phoned AA one night because I was crying about nothing. I was crying out of some sort of, just a feeling in my heart that I was empty. And I phoned the AA helpline, and I did not want to do this. I was reluctant and very belligerent about it. What are they going to know? How are they going to help me? They haven't had the life I've had. And I phoned this guy and I told him how I felt. I said, "It's a Tuesday." I said, "Nothing's happened. I'm desperate for a drink, but I'm scared if I drink, I'm not going to feel any better. But the idea of not drinking is as terrifying." You know, this limbo of drinking doesn't help me and make me feel better, but not drinking is terrifying. And he said, it really annoyed me because he was so casual about it. He went, "Oh yeah, I remember feeling like that. I remember feeling that way. There's an AA meeting nearby to you. Why don't you get to that?" Well, what are they going to know? You know. And I went to this meeting, and it was in South London, in Kennington, and they burnt candles, and you could smoke, which was fantastic. And this woman said to me on the way in, "Would you like a cup of tea?" Which is the most innocuous thing. And I remember saying to her, thinking, "Why would you want to make me a cup of tea? I'm a piece of shit." Which is the strangest logic, but as an addict in the latter stages of my addiction, I thought nothing of myself. And at that very first meeting, I listened to the stories and I listened to the sharing, and we always talk about this: listen for the similarities, not the differences. And you know, it was different drinks. There was in that meeting, there was lawyers, there was builders, there was a homeless guy in a sleeping bag. But I identified with what they talked about. I can't drink safely. It's not safe for me to drink. And some people it is. Some people can get drunk every now and then and go for it. It was not safe for me to drink. I could not control my drinking. And also the feelings that I had that accompanied that. And so I started a very slow journey into AA where, you know, there's a program, there's a whole set of steps, and people are there to help you. There's no professional people there. It's all just recovered alcoholics helping each other, and I love that. You know, there's a lot of equanimity about it, and the thing that kept me going in was I heard people who had the same problems as me, same feelings, whatever, about alcohol, but they were living without alcohol, and they sounded like they were content or they had some sort of happiness. And I was the sort of person who thought happiness was never going to be for me, so I wanted to know more about the, you know, just the curiosity about how this can. So I carried on going to meetings, and slowly it changed. And slowly, some people come in and they get it straight away. I did not. I was stubborn. I thought I knew better. I'm going to do it differently. I'm special. I'm different. You know, and when I let go of that stuff about thinking I knew better, because I obviously didn't, my life was a wreck. You know, I had ruined all the great, I'd have good things in my life, like jobs and relationships, and I would ruin them because I felt I didn't deserve them or whatever. And I just slowly stuck around, and I kept coming to meetings, and I stopped drinking. And when I stopped drinking, I felt insane. That's when I knew I was an alcoholic, because I couldn't live without the alcohol. And but slowly the program has genuinely, and I used to hate hearing this in the early days, it's been transformative. And now I have a feelings of happiness and contentment that I did not know was possible. And I am actually getting married in a month. And that is, and I'm 41, just before I get married, I'm turning 41, and that sounds like proper old to me. But I've met somebody who I just adore and is smart, And if I wasn't sober and working the AA program, I would not be able to be with somebody who, you know, I would not have met this person and have the respect for myself and for other people. And I have love to give now. I have learned in AA to love myself. And now I can go out into the world and I can love. I've got stepkids. And I can be kind to my colleagues. And I can show up. And when the phone rings at work, I'm not scared to pick it up anymore. So thanks. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Patrick, and congratulations. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength, and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person to share is Julie.
Thank you. My name's Julie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Julie. Hi.
Yeah, it's great to be here this morning. And, yeah, I'm just going to say, like, when I first started drinking, I was only 12 or 13, and I mean, the last speaker pretty much told my story, except for getting married to someone wonderful. It hasn't happened yet. But I started drinking alcohol, but prior to that, I was a kid at school who ate their lunch by themselves. I was very sort of scared and low self-esteem, that sort of thing. I had quite a difficult home life as well, which didn't help. So it kind of reinforced how I felt about me. So when I had my first drink of alcohol, when I was about 13, we were at Waihee Beach for a holiday. And I just kept drinking and drinking. And I didn't stop until I passed out. And I can remember my cousin slapping me in the face and saying, "Get up, get up." But I was so drunk, I couldn't get up. And that was the pattern of my drinking. It never really, very occasionally I'd be able to go and have a few drinks, and it didn't end up in me being, unconscious pretty much on the floor. So I carried on drinking like that for 33 years. And it was hellish, you know. I wasn't able to achieve any of my goals. I wasn't what you call a high-functioning alcoholic. But my husband had left me, and that was a good thing. He left me and went to Australia, and I was left with these two little girls. And I was thinking, you know, there's really no one that can look after them if something happens to me. I have to get some help. So I started going to AA. And it's a bit like the previous speaker. I saw all these people in different walks of life, and they'd all looked reasonably happy, like they had it together. They had cars, you know, they had nice cars. I had an old dunger, and, you know, they had jobs, and they seemed to be able to communicate without any sort of fear or anything. There was a lot of laughing going on there, which I loved. So I kept going, and I only went once a week. But that's all I could manage with my daughters. I've got a babysitter once a week. And I just kept on going. And I can remember the first time I got asked to share. And I went up and I sat down and I told them all my problems, what a terrible life I'd had. You know, it wasn't for them, I would have been okay. It was a real blame game sort of thing. And they all just said to me, "That's great, Julie, keep coming back." And I realised now what they meant. You know, "You're very sick, but keep coming back." Because the program got me. It did get me. So I kept going. And I met some, because, you know, I'd never really known what love was before. And this wonderful lady who's deceased now, she pretty much became my sponsor right from the first time. And she had a big scar from across her throat. She had tried to cut her throat. She'd been in desperate places herself. And she used to ring me every night, and I used to think, what's this woman want? You know, she's always ringing, and I'd have to change the receiver from one ear to the other because my ear would get so sore. But she actually kept me going, and it made me realise, you know, the magic of one alcoholic speaking to another alcoholic. And I responded to that. That's what they call the language of the heart in these rooms. The language of the heart speaks to me. And you only hear it in the rooms of AA, I believe. Over the years, prior to going to AA, I'd tried to commit suicide several times, and I ended up in Tokanui Mental Health. And I got all of these different diagnoses slapped on me, and all this heavy-duty medication, because they were looking at me from the medical or the medical model, and the AA model is so different from that. And I stayed there for a while. I had really bad experiences in there, and I left. And I remember thinking to myself when I left, I'm going to take care of myself. I don't need to be at this place, you know. And so, you know, like I said, I carried on drinking till I was 33. And now I've been sober half my life. And it's amazing because I never thought that I would be able to stay sober for so long. I had a lot of work to do on myself. I was very good at picking up resentments. And, you know, quick to get angry and that sort of thing. I came from a family of door slammers and drawer slammers and shouting and carrying on. And that, I thought that was normal. But, you know, this program has worked in my life for so long, and it's taught me how to change. You know, it's an inside job. You know, the recovery is an inside job. And I also learnt that it wasn't the drinking that was the problem, it was the thinking that was the problem. And that this program addresses me, my thinking and my attitudes and what my motivation is for things. And, you know, I was always very narcissistic, and I think, you know, the only thing that mattered really was myself. But since coming into AA, I've been able to have empathy and care about other people and work on myself. And I think the biggest thing for me was acceptance, because I could never accept if something changed. You know, we made a plan and then something changed. And this guy was supposed to come with me to Carrington Hospital. They used to have the detox ward there. And I was only about 18 months sober, I think, and he didn't turn up and he wouldn't answer the phone. I was furious. I was furious. And then I had this epiphany. Well, that's how it's supposed to be. And you know, you get on your knees and you pray every morning and you ask God to help you and to, you know, for you to be of help to other people and to keep you sober and give thanks for the life I have. So if I've done that every morning, then this is how it's meant to be, and I just went along on my own and it was great. But it's learning those things like acceptance, you know, being able to be a bit flexible in how I behave, being more loving and kind, learning to keep my mouth shut when I'm so want to say something that's not going to be edifying. Trying to be a different, yeah, the best, I've heard it in the rooms, it's the best version of me. Because that's, I've never had this sense of, you know, in my drinking days, this sense of peace and just being happy within myself. I was always trying to get away from me. I hated me. I thought I had nothing to offer. And no one would like me because I certainly didn't like myself. But now I think I'm a pretty okay person. I'm pretty proud of myself and went back to university in my 40s. My early 50s. Got a degree. Work in that field now. And it was always a bucket list thing for me, but I could never do it. I could never do it because I was always drunk. I couldn't make plans and follow through because you never knew what kind of chaos was going to come from one day to the next. You know, coming here, I think, too, everyone has been through their own difficulties, but they're all, you know, they all can get the same kind of help from AA that I got. And I think you see that there's a real power in a group when people are sharing. You know, often I'm moved to tears, you know, and I realise that you look at a person, you make a judgment, but really it's nothing. It's not really who these people are. I mean, I was really good at putting on a front as well, but inside I was angry, I was anxious, I was afraid, paranoid at times. So, you know, things have really, really changed for me over time. And I'm just really grateful for this program and what it's done for me. Life is so different now. I still have to give myself a talking to in the morning, a gratitude list. I go through the things that I'm grateful for, and that helps me to get going a bit better. I've learned the value of surrender. I never could surrender. And surrender is one thing that helps me today if things are not going my way, because it goes with acceptance. surrender, just surrendering everything to a power greater than myself. And it always works out okay. Not the way that I thought it would, but there's something better that comes out of it. There's so much that I've got from AA. I'm very grateful.
Thanks, Julie. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the last person to share this morning is Frances. Kia ora, Frances.
Kia ora koutou. My name is Frances. I'm a very grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Frances.
Hi, Frances.
Thank you for having me here today. I was thinking a lot about, I woke up this morning and I did my prayer and meditation, and I thought, how do I cram a lot of, several decades of sobriety and a story before into 8 minutes? So I'm going to do my best, but I just asked my higher power for what are the words that I need to say today. So I don't know what's going to happen. We'll just wing this. I started drinking when I was 12. I was covering shame. I was trying to cover shame. My story does involve sexual trauma at a very young age, and I shared about that at a speaker meeting a while back, and I had people come up to me afterwards and say, thank you for sharing that, because we don't talk about it much, and it's not the reason that I drank, but it's part of my story, and I know that other people will have that in their background. And I drank partly to cover that, because I didn't trust anyone. I didn't know who I could trust with that story. And I just kept it, locked it away inside, tried to lock it away inside. And I drank to cover a lot of that. And I really know that it was such an early age. And I tried also to commit suicide by the time I was 14 years old, unsuccessfully, thankfully. I didn't have anything to turn to. I didn't have a spiritual guidance in my life. I felt very different to everyone else. I'm Native American, and I'm a mix of European as well, and I grew up in a very white neighborhood, so I also didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. And again, it's the same stories that we all have. We just have different layers of these stories that are woven. I'm not necessarily different to people that walk the streets and haven't ended up in AA. It's just I ended up here, and I'm really grateful. But I had a rough ride to get here. By the time I got here, I was 23 years old. I had a very good job. I'd gone to university. I lived, a life that looked normal and successful on the outside. I hadn't yet lost my job. I hadn't yet lost a house. I'd lost a lot of friends, and I was drinking large bottles or large quantities in bottle volume alone in a room of vodka by myself. And that wasn't what was normal drinking. But I had had enough shame, humiliation, isolation, and I was absolutely so tired. And if you look at that, that's a nice little acronym for life. But I really was in a very desperate place. And what happened for me was I had a drinking buddy that I'd worked with, and I didn't know that he'd got sober. And so my higher power was busy working for me before I knew it. And I was about to commit suicide again, and I had a very specific plan. I was going to drive into a bridge. It was going to look like an accident, because I never wanted to, I didn't want to bring shame or sadness on my family. It needed to look accidental. I didn't want anybody to know what was going on inside me. I did, as I say, I just didn't trust anyone. I didn't know who I could trust. And I devised a plan, and instead I called this friend, this work colleague, and I just said, hey, do you want to go for a drink or something? And he, obviously, at the point, I didn't know he was sober, and he said no, and he said, what was going on? And I don't even remember the conversation, because it's a long time ago, but I opened up that I wasn't doing so well, and he asked me if I'd like to go to a meeting, and I thought, why are you asking me this? But okay. And I went to my first AA meeting instead of driving into a bridge. And thankfully, I've never looked back. I walked into a room that's, we often share about the fact that I walked into a room, you know, like Patrick said, there were lawyers, there were politicians. I got sober in Washington, D.C. In February 1988. And I, as on the outside, I looked like I had things going, and on the inside, I was dead. And that's what I related to, the similarities, not the difference. I was, thankfully, I heard that message early on, and I just listened to people who were homeless, and they talked about the shame and the humiliation, and I felt the same as they did, and it was the greatest leveler. And it was the most wonderful thing, because I thought, I don't have to have this pretense of my life is all okay just because it kind of looks like it's okay on the outside because I'm a total wreck on the inside. And I learned how to trust something outside of myself. So the second step helped me understand that for a while it could be the program until I worked out what my higher power was. And I know that, you know, for me, I trusted the steps. I trusted a sponsor. And I really, really came to trust in the higher power. And I, you know, the beauty of the program was listening and sharing. And I, when I got sober, I was very fortunate. We had meetings all the time around the clock, and I was able to go to a meeting when I would have been drinking. So that was a hell of a lot of meetings. And I was able to lock arms with people that I got sober with, and we got each other sober. We kept each other sober. We spent time on the phone. We spent time in coffee afterwards. And I still reckon that some of that is the greatest way to kind of get sober, create that fellowship, wrap the program around us. I loved hearing people speak about what it was like to be sober and live sober, because when I walked into the rooms, I was 23 years old. I thought, you know, gosh, if I ever get married. And seriously, that was like the furthest that nobody would have wanted to touch me. But, you know, the insanity in my head, the alcoholism said, oh, but, you know, you were going to have to drink champagne at your wedding, so you'll just have to sort yourself out, you know. And how on earth can you get married without champagne? You know, that was the thinking, right? And I am pleased to say that by the time I did get married, after I'd moved to New Zealand on my own with the courage and the strength to do that, several years into my own sobriety, and then I met someone later and I did get married, and drinking was the last thing on my mind. It would have ruined my entire life. I now have two beautiful girls who are 20 and 22 who have never seen me take a drink. They know my story. I share it with them. We have the most beautiful adult relationship. I'm no longer married, but I was able to, that it morphed away amicably, and I was able to walk through that process with acceptance and a serenity, and it was challenging sometimes, but, you know, it wasn't about me, and it wasn't about him, it was about our girls and what we had created together. And I, you know, I credit this to my higher power. I credit it to the serenity prayer, for accepting the things I cannot change and being willing to change the things that I can, and that courage, that kind of what is the difference? What is mine? What side of street do I have to walk on? You know, instead of taking everyone else's inventory, I have to be honest. How it works says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And there's a hell of a lot of honesty in that chapter 5, and there's a whole lot of honesty in the steps, and I have to be willing to allow the layers of the onion to peel, and my onion still peels today. I am not finished. We don't graduate. I have down periods, but I have enough in the bank, and I remember being told that when I was in early sobriety, just keep putting things in the bank. Put a meeting in the bank, put a phone call in the bank, put it in the bank, deposit it, because you're going to need to withdraw sometimes. And that's so true, because I have the ability now to know that I can draw back. And yeah, I'm just incredibly grateful, and yeah, keep coming back. The miracles are endless. Keep coming back and get all of them. Thank you.
Thanks, Frances.
Thanks, Frances.
That brings us towards the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, where you'll find details of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. You can also phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in touch with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.